Aloha and welcome to the Passing Through Podcast. I'm Peter Webker.
And I'm Betsy Webker.
And together we bring you inspiration and information that focuses on a simplified, independent, and travel-centered life.
In this episode, we're speaking with Nora Livingstone, a remarkable young woman who is CEO of Toronto-based Animal Experience International, which is a nonprofit organization that matches volunteers with animal welfare programs all over the world.
We talked with Nora about how one fateful trip to a far-off, exotic destination literally changed her life, bringing her out of the depths of misery and into a brand new career focused on her passions. Have a listen.
So we're here this morning coming to you from Singitoka on the coral coast of Fiji, and we're talking with Nora Livingstone, who is a new online acquaintance of ours, and she's in Toronto. Hey, Nora.
Hi, how are you doing today?
We're doing good, thank you.
Really good, thanks. Yeah, it's a little bit colder, we've already found out, in Toronto than it is here on Fiji. But our weather isn't exactly optimum this morning either. We've got a coldish and rainy, so we can kind of relate with what's going on in Toronto. But as I alluded to, Nora is a rather recent online friend with a very compelling story that we thought our podcast listeners would be very interested to hear. And so just as a little bit of background, Nora, you decided to begin a journey across the world to an exotic destination, and it was a means of healing from a broken engagement. But before we get into that story, can you give us a little bit of background, who you are, where you grew up, and where you were headed before everything changed for you?
Absolutely. Well, I think no one was really shocked when I started really traveling on my own. My dad was a career soldier in the Canadian military, and so we moved around a lot. When I was 6 months old, we moved from Canada to Germany, and my poor mom had two kids under six, and we lived right outside the Black Forest, and so I grew up where fairy tales are from. Not terrible for children. I moved back to Canada as, you know, still a pretty young kid, and we lived across Canada. I grew up in the Rocky Mountains, and then we came to Ontario, which was amazing and different and very strange every time we'd move. I grew up as actually a pretty shy kid. I loved the idea of adventure, and I loved the idea of moving all the time and having roots with my family. But the idea of making new friends and talking with new people and having to really just show yourself off a whole bunch to meet new people seemed really scary when I was younger, even though we did it all the time. I went to university for environmental studies and anthropology. I thought that my traveling would be over, and I thought, oh, that fun adventure and that life that, you know, I coveted and I really liked, that is for someone else who isn't shy, and that's for someone else who who's better at adventure than me, I guess. Maybe who isn't as clumsy. And
amazing how we can talk ourselves out of our dreams, right?
Yeah, we just make all these excuses, and there's all these things why we can't do it. And that was definitely me. And so I thought that my version of stability was not moving all the time. And I thought my version of stability was having a house and having a long-term relationship and a long-term job and all these really deep roots in a community. But yeah, I wasn't happy doing that. And it certainly is great for other people, and it made sense for other people, but it just made more sense the more I traveled, the more I found out who I was, and the more that, wait a minute, I'm actually not a shy person. I just thought I was. And there were just all these lies that I had told myself why I couldn't do things. And then suddenly, yeah, I've been a lot of places.
Well, so you had a broken heart. You'd had a long-term relationship. You were engaged to be married, kind of setting off on that conventional path that all of us at one form or another seem to have traveled and then taken a different route from. And there was a long time healing from that. So what had you frustrated to the point of packing it all up, literally, and moving to Nepal, of all places? How did you decide Nepal was the place to start over?
It was so different. It was somewhere that just it didn't have any hurt associated with it. And in school, I did anthropology, and I studied the anthropology of death, actually, and how we celebrate life and how we talk about death, or how we don't talk about it in some cultures. And my professor had spent a lot of time in Nepal, and so a lot of our readings were about Nepal and the people and the culture and the richness and the color. And I've always loved the outdoors. I've always loved mountains. I've always loved the space that mountains can create in us. And it's Everest. It's one of the only mountains that you can say, and everyone around the world will know it. So I thought, well, I need something new, because what I'm doing right now is not working. And me sitting at home being real sad I'm not living my life. And we were engaged like pretty young, and I felt like this isn't the end of my life, even though some days it does feel like it, and some days it does feel like maybe I just won't be happy. Maybe I won't get adventures. Maybe that's for other people. Well, what I get to do is I get to make these adventures now, and let's go somewhere that seems like it's totally another planet. And that will be Nepal, because it's not Europe, it's not North America, it's not anywhere that I speak the language.
Yeah, it's quite different. And my sister traveled to Nepal some years ago, and she enjoyed it quite a bit. Did you have a certain period of time that you were planning to be in Nepal, or did you just go kind of on an open-ended one-way ticket?
I knew that I would be coming back to Canada, and I knew eventually I would come back here, see my family, see my friends. But I did just get an open-ended ticket because I didn't know where else I wanted to go. Nepal is just in the center of, you know, huge continents, and so I felt if I'm already going to spend some time in Nepal and some time on this plane, if an opportunity arises, maybe I'll go somewhere else, maybe I'll stay there longer, maybe I'll hate it and need to come back in 2 weeks. I want to just have a little bit of freedom.
Yeah, there's always that possibility. It's never happened to us, but, you know, it is out there, yeah.
Yeah, and you always question yourself, right? That you're like, maybe this won't be great. And you get there and say, well, on what planet did I not think this would be wonderful? Of course this is wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, when you got to Nepal, then what happened? And how did Nepal help you get over and start over your life?
Yeah, Nepal was such an amazing place for me, because it was one of the first times I was truly independent. I wasn't traveling with my family. I wasn't traveling with friends. There wasn't a boyfriend doing things for me. It was, I had to figure it out. And it seemed just exhilarating, and it seemed really easy. I didn't speak the language, but I can still order a tea. I can still figure out where I'm going. And people were just so excited that a Canadian, and a lot of people that I met in rural areas had never heard of Canada. So this Canadian from this weird country that's very exotic is traveling in our country and wants to help us. That's so interesting. And I volunteered a lot. So I volunteered with kids for a while. I volunteered at a medical clinic with dogs. And it was all just meeting lots of random people. I would see someone in a bakery or on the street, and I would hear them speak English. And we would just look at each other and say, "Whoa, you speak the same language. What are you doing here?" And about half the people that are in Nepal speaking English are volunteering. So there's just tons of opportunities to have these really rich, really interesting experiences that you're living with families, you're going to these rural areas, you're talking with these people, and you're loving them and they're loving you. And even though you are a mess, sometimes they love you even more. And it was just wonderful to just be excited about where I was, to see beautiful things. You can drop your camera in Nepal and take a beautiful picture. So everywhere around was just full of culture and full of just this rich, rich community. And I could just see value in what I was doing. I could talk with these kids. I could work with these dogs. I could really just lift myself up by offering service to others.
Most of the time when we're traveling, it seems as though life is more vivid, and I wondered about that. You've described the same thing, but I think it's just because we really aren't vested necessarily in a situation or its outcome. You know, we can be fully present in the moment, and it sounds as though you had kind of a similar epiphany in terms of your self-view and stripping all away all the preconceived notions of life back home and really experiencing this to the fullest.
Absolutely. I think a lot of it was thinking about the lies that I had been telling myself, or just who I thought I was, and then what I thought life was about. It's so interesting. Living in Toronto, we have vibrant streetcars and we have subways and buses and things like that, and I would never take a picture of that because this is just where I'm living and that's fine. But in Nepal, if you see a streetcar, you see a bus, you're like, wow, holy shmoleons, that's weird, I'll take a picture of that. And I felt the same way when I was walking around Nepal, that people are living here and this is their everyday, and this is amazing because I'm going to go back home and my everyday is going to be amazing as well. And I have the opportunity to opt in every day to be excited about where I am and what I'm doing and the blessings that I have and the food that I have, and just thinking, yeah, about my relationship with my life. And was I opting in, or was I kind of on automatic? Was I autopiloting through some things because that's what I thought I should be doing?
Right. And so it sounds to me like, you know, you had certain expectations, but that they were exceeded in an entirely different way. And that happens so often when we visit a new place that captures us.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, I thought, I'll go to Nepal. It'll be really nice. I'll meet some people. I'll see some UNESCO sites. I'll see Everest, maybe, if I'm lucky. And y'all just, like, come home, and it'll be fine. I didn't think, oh, I'll go and I'll totally change who I am and I'll become empowered and I'll have this huge breakthrough moment. I thought, yeah, it'd be really nice to go on vacation and maybe I can, like, get back to work when I get back, whenever that is.
And instead, you just had a mind-blowing experience.
Yeah. Instead of going back to who I was and where I was, I realized that I didn't really know myself and I didn't really know where I was supposed to be. And that was okay. And that was something that I could work on. I'm in Nepal. I have nothing else that I have to do. I'm not at home with these ideas of budgeting or scheduling or work or jobs. I was there to be there. I was there to live and to help others. So yeah, I got to just do that, which was fantastic.
Part of your stay there included a trek up the side of Everest, not all the way to the top, as I recall, but how did you end up hooking up to make that trek?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time thinking about it, and I spent a lot of time thinking about how it would be so cool if one day I could do something like that. And one day when I come back to Nepal after I have trained a lot and I've done a lot of things, it would be so neat to tell people that I've been to Everest, and which is so funny because I'm there now. So why don't I experience it now? I was volunteering at an animal rescue center that was primarily dogs and domestics, and it was just amazing. I loved my time there. Little scabby dogs that have mange or different parasites, or they've been hit by cars, or they're emaciated for some reason. And I just got to go in, and I've no business volunteering there because I have no idea what I'm doing. But dogs need to be bathed. Okay, I can probably figure out how to do that. Or dogs need to be fed. Yeah, sure, why not? Or dogs need to be socialized. Okay, well, I'll just sit with a dog and tell them about my relationship because they're not going to get sick of me telling them about it. And and it was amazing because these dogs were just excited. There wasn't aggression in the dogs. There wasn't sadness in the dogs. There was just, hey, you're here and that's great. And let's go for a walk. And hey, you're here again. Maybe we'll go for another walk. Maybe there'll be a cookie involved. That's fantastic.
Dogs are so awesome.
Oh, no kidding. So good. And so I met some volunteers that were also international that had seen the stray population in Kathmandu, and they had just there are so many dogs in the Kathmandu Valley that are stray that need our help, and we all kind of feel powerless. And then they saw that this group existed and said, I've been trekking, or I've been volunteering, or I was just here for a week, but I need to do something to help these dogs because we see so many of them and they are suffering. So we'd see volunteers all the time, and I just made these really great connections. And one day there was a volunteer that I got pretty close with, and she said, yeah, so I'm thinking of doing like a trip to base camp or a trip to Everest, or I'm not really sure. What do you think that would look like? Do you think you'd want to come? And yeah, I kind of made a agreement with myself that I would always opt in and I'd always say yes, because as much as I want to go back to these places, I don't know when I'll get to again. So yeah, hey, if you're going to ask me to go to Everest, I'm going to say yes. Let's do it. That would be weird. So we went in January. The coldest month. But being a really good Canadian, it wasn't that cold for me. And the whole time that you're trekking, you're staying in different tea houses and lodges. And so, you know, it's maybe only minus 10 degrees when you're trekking, but then you also sleep in the minus 10. So felt a little bit like home. There was a lot of snow, but it did create even more space. And it just, the landscape was so beautiful. The people were beautiful. They just wanted to know our story. We wanted to know their story. And we wanted to know each other's story because we didn't know each other that well. It's a long time to hike together. So you get to know everything about the other person. And to my surprise, she didn't run the other way screaming. She thought I was as interesting as I thought she was interesting. So it was just an amazing experience to start with picking ticks off of a dog and then suddenly being at base camp in Everest.
How cool is that? I love it. You know, the story, it reminded me of the book Wild by Cheryl Strayed, which has inspired so many people. I was just enthralled with it, beautifully written. And she also decided that a big trek was necessary, and so she hiked the Pacific Coast Trail by herself after she had experienced the loss of her mother. And she felt that the trip was going to be necessary for the sort of healing and discovery that we've talked about today. And I think, though, from what I've read about your Everest trek, there was a real tipping point that occurred on the hike, so to speak. And so I'm wondering if you could share what sort of perspective overall you gained from the trek specifically, and then where did it lead you afterwards?
Yeah, I felt actually like a lot of shame at first, because I was in this country that these mountains are so big and these ideas are so big, and then I was hanging on to such small things. It was like heartbreak is always really hard, and it is really heavy, and it takes a really long time to get over grief. But with these really big tangible things, I felt like, wow, okay, this is way bigger than you, and your tiny little things that are inside of you, you can probably let go. You don't need to have them anymore, and you can get up these mountains a little bit faster if you leave your baggage at the bottom. And and I also felt like, wow, this is actually really cool. I didn't, like, oh, I'll go to Everest and I'll come back and I'll show some people some pictures. But I didn't think about, oh, I'll tell people some stories, and these stories are going to be about me meeting people and telling their stories and telling how I viewed myself and how I viewed just everything that had happened. And yeah, I just realized that so much healing had happened because I'd opted into feeling like healing happened, and I opted into happiness, but also because I had spent so much time serving other people. and serving these animals. And just with these thoughts in my head, the happiest I was when I was teaching these kids, or I was working in the medical clinic and I was figuring out how to make people feel healthy, and then working with dogs, how to get dogs to be adopted or off the street, or just scratching behind their ears. I myself had this big realization that I had the power to make people smile and to make dogs feel nice, which was so great, because I felt like I had been abandoned, and I felt like I was this huge victim, and I was hanging on to these things. And the story that I was writing myself was that I was a victim, and I had pain, and I had all these things, but now suddenly I have the power to not make people feel that way. And I can not always take it away, but I can listen to people, and I can, you know, actively talk with people and let them know just the value that they have just by themselves. And with the dogs as well, that we don't choose how we're born, and these dogs would never choose to be street dogs when they're born. And so it's not their fault that this is what their lives are. And so I can go in and give them an extra cookie, or, you know, scratch them behind the ears and give them hugs, and just really take away all the pain that I had felt from me, but then from them as well.
So it sounds like this epiphany led you to a life of service. So tell listeners a little bit about Animal Experience International, which you were led to found after you returned from Nepal.
Yeah, it's funny how a big life-shattering event will lead to the greatest thing ever. When I left Nepal, I traveled to a few more countries in Asia, and I volunteered with animals. I'd always have a heart for animals, and I always had a great affection for them, but I just never felt like it was my calling to be a vet or to work directly with them. I wasn't really sure how I could intermingle everything. When I came back to Canada, I got a job as a volunteer coordinator at a wildlife center in Toronto, and I loved it. And suddenly it was very obviously, this is what I'm supposed to do, that you love animals, you can be around them all the time, you love volunteering, you love what volunteering has brought to you, and you love that you can help other people and encourage them to volunteer. So yeah, this is perfect. You'll do this for the rest of your life. Didn't really work out so much. I loved the center. It was fantastic. But after a few years, I was kind of itching to do something else. And my business partner is still a veterinarian. And she said, hey, I have this crazy idea that you have traveled with all these animals and you know all these really great centers. Why don't we start a business that we help people travel? And we take out all the excuses. So one of the excuses is they don't know where to live. So we'll figure out where to put them when they're at the centers. Another excuse is, well, I don't have the money for it. Okay, so we'll help them with fundraising. And then, well, I don't have a background in working with animals, and I don't have the education. Well, I'm an anthropologist, so I have no business working with animals, so I can definitely explain to you how to do it. And yeah, so that was about 4 years ago that we started AEI, and it has been amazing. And that certainly is my calling. I love doing it. Not only do we work with local groups that work in the local context, and so it's not just a bunch of North Americans that are traveling around the world saying, this is how you would help a sea turtle here or here, here, here. We're working with the people that want to help sea turtles, that understand the world around them and the community around them, on how we can support them. So we're giving hands and feet to people that already know what they're doing, which is fantastic, and just means we can really just empower people. But then we're empowering also the volunteers that are going. So we have North Americans and Europeans and Australians primarily right now that, yeah, have a heart for animals, and maybe they're in school, or maybe they've retired, or maybe they're working a job that just isn't animal-based, and we can give them the opportunity to work with animals they've never thought they could before. We're accredited in some universities and colleges and professional groups. So vet techs or vets can go away and get continuing education credits, and we can just talk even more about experiential learning and service and how there's a lot of learning in the classroom, of course, but there's a lot of learning that can happen globally. So it's been an adventure.
Where all do people go when they sign up with Animal Experience International?
It's a good question. We have 14 different countries we send people to right now. We have 26 different projects, which is amazing. So some of our top projects right now that people just go gaga over is we have an elephant sanctuary in Thailand that people do feeding, cleaning, enrichment. They go swimming with the elephants because that's the easiest way to wash an elephant. We have a wildlife center in Guatemala that people work directly with the government, that when animals are confiscated from animal traffickers, they get brought to this wildlife center. And then we not only do an education program, but we do wildlife rehabilitation. So the animals are rehabilitated and brought back to the wild. And then we educate not only the tourists, but the local community on ways that we can feed our families without poaching, and ways that we can help all species on Earth without hindering the lives of animals. We have sea turtle projects in amazing countries, Greece, Guatemala, Costa Rica, and Australia. They all have very different reasons that their sea turtle conservation and rehabilitation projects there. Some to do with fishing, some to do with seagrass being destroyed in typhoons, some with poaching. So it's so interesting because these local groups come to us and they say, this is what we need. We need to have a biologist, or we need to have someone walk on the beach, or we need to have someone that cleans the cages of an endangered animal so they can feed an ocelot or a jaguar. And then we go down, we visit the centers first, which is an amazing perk of the job. And then after we go and we meet these people and they become part of our family, then suddenly we're sending them volunteers. And not only are we responsible to send them really good volunteers, but then we can be really excited when the volunteers come back and they're part of the family as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, your passion for your work just comes through in your voice, and it's just so great to hear about it, that, you know, out of being truly independent, as you described for the first time with your travels, you also discovered your passion. And it's such an amazing experience when that happens. What sort of advice would you give to people who might be similarly stuck in the same or similar ways that you were stuck before this transformation occurred? They're where they don't want to be. And, you know, what would you advise them?
I think that just to stop believing the lies that we tell ourselves, because I didn't think that I was smart enough to be a veterinarian and help animals. And I didn't think that I was independent enough to travel and go places. And I didn't think all of these things. And all of a sudden, my life is helping animals and talking with people and traveling all the time. And I had to stop listening to those lies. I had to stop listening to myself saying, you can't do it. And frankly, what was the worst that could happen? I think that I kept on thinking, well, this is for someone else and this isn't for me. And I would just leave it at that. But instead of really consciously thinking about, well, I'll go to Nepal, and yeah, if I hate it, I'll just come back home. And this happens all the time, that like, well, yeah, I'll try this out. Well, what is really the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is I don't like it, and I'll come back home, and I'll figure out something else that I want to do. Every day, we opt into our lives. And so every day, we're super empowered to make the decision that we want, not the decision that we think we want. And we live in a world of apathy and confusion and just sort of gray area, but that's not really real. that's what we think is real. So we take that step back and go, well, why not? Why don't I just change this? And if I don't like it, I can change back. I can change to something else. I can be a million things. I can wear a whole bunch of different hats. I can go to these different places because back home is safe and it will always be safe. So I can always come back home.
Yeah. If people are interested in Animal Experience International or to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, well, we're on every social media known to man because it's 2014. So we're pretty easy to find. The website is animalexperienceinternational.com. But then we're on Facebook under the exact same name. We're on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, too, as Nora Livingstone. It's easy to find me there. And, yeah, you can just email me, nora@animalei.com. I obviously love talking, so everyone should definitely email me. If they have any questions or if they just need a little, you know, gentle poke to do something, email me for sure. This is what I love doing. I love encouraging people because I've been there and I understand being scared and I understand not knowing that I don't like where I am, but not knowing where to go. So this is the best part. Getting people to adventure and find themselves and get out there. It's great.
Well, we both just want to say thank you so much for sharing your story and all of the encouraging aspects with our listeners today. It's just a pleasure getting to know you, and we certainly both feel as though we would like to follow up with your organization and keep in touch as our travels take us to some of the places where you're active as well. So thanks so much for speaking with us today. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Great.
Thanks for spending time with the Passing Through podcast. If you found this conversation interesting, visit us at passingthrough.com. You'll find more inspiration and information to help build a meaningful and fulfilling lifestyle. We've done it, and so can you. Until next time, aloha.